can blame a country for being able to take advantage of another country for the benefit of its citizens?
President Donald Trump meets with China's leader on North Korea and trade. It's Friday, November 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington, and you're a part of the program. Join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, President Trump heads to the APEC summit. We'll meet a Rohingya refugee finding a new life in America. And we'll take to the air on board a special NASA observatory. That's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday declared his government and China must work together to liberate the region and the world from what he called the very serious threat imposed by the murderous regime in North Korea. As VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, who's traveling with the president in Beijing, reports, the topic of North Korea, along with the huge U.S.-China trade gap, dominated the talks.
Alongside Chinese President Xi Jinping, Trump declared that Washington and Beijing agreed not to repeat the mistakes of the past in dealing with Pyongyang, which over the years has managed to rapidly advance its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs.
The entire civilized world must unite to confront the North Korean menace. And the entire world is watching us right now.
In his scripted remarks, Xi was more muted.
On the Korean Peninsula nuclear issue, we reiterated the firm commitment to achieving denuclearization of the peninsula and upholding the international nonproliferation regime. The two sides will continue to fully and strictly implement UN Security Council resolutions. At the same time, the two sides commit to working towards a solution through dialogue and negotiation.
Trump earlier said excellent progress, including on North Korea, was made in his talks with the Chinese leader.
And I do believe there's a solution to that, as you do.
At a formal welcome outside the Great Hall of the People, the two leaders walked side by side on a red carpet. A military band played the national anthems of the two countries, and ceremonial cannon fire from Tiananmen Square saluted Trump. An exuberant crowd of schoolchildren waved American and Chinese flags. The talks between Trump and Xi also dealt with trade, a touchy subject since the U.S. president has long complained about the trade imbalance between China and the United States. Trump said the U.S. trade deficit with China is shockingly hundreds of billions of dollars annually, and that past administrations allowed it to get so far out of kilter.
But, I don't blame China. After all, who can blame a country for being able to take advantage of another country for the benefit of its citizens?
China and the United States are the two largest economies and important engines of global economic growth. We need to further expand trade and investment cooperation, strengthen macroeconomic policy investment cooperation, pursue healthy, stable, and dynamically balanced economic and trade relations.
Both leaders played up what they referred to as $250 billion worth of business deals signed during President Trump's visit here, but a sizable chunk are non-binding memorandums that may never materialize. Steve Herman, VOA News, Beijing.
President Donald Trump now heads to Da Nang, Vietnam, to deliver a key speech on international trade Friday when he meets with leaders of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Council. The president is expected to outline his vision of a free and open Indo-Pacific region. But as Millar Sega tells us, given Trump's past rhetoric on trade, analysts say Asian leaders will be listening for clues on whether the president understands the region's strategic and economic importance to America.
Da Nang, Vietnam. Once a war zone, but this week the meeting place for 21 APEC countries. Combined, they account for nearly half of the world's population and trade. Matt Goodman handled APEC issues for President Obama.
It's a really important part of the world where a lot of our economic future will be determined. And, of course, we have a lot of security interests out there with 90,000 troops in the region, with the North Korea challenge, with disputes in the maritime spaces of the region. So there's a lot at stake on this trip.
But after President Trump's harsh trade rhetoric and his decision to abandon the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, Asian leaders are looking for reassurance on the U.S. role in the region.
I think that was a real blow to our credibility in the region, and I think we need to replace it with something. If it isn't TPP, we need some other economic and trade strategy that Asians find credible. And so far, frankly, the Trump administration hasn't laid that out. So on this trip, he has an opportunity to do that.
Like U.S. and Chinese trade delegation meetings in Beijing this week, government officials say bilateral deals are America's priority, aimed at cutting trade imbalances.
As you know, addressing the imbalance in China trade has been a central focus of collaborative discussions between President Trump and President Xi. And achieving fair and reciprocal treatment for the companies is a shared objective.
But each country is different. And APEC Secretariat Chief Alan Bollard says a summit is a good place to try out new agreements.
There's a complicated noodle bowl in Asia, noodle bowl of agreements. We try out new recipes, better recipes. We get recipes from right around the region, try them, and the ones that work, all the economies will use.
Analysts say it's an important first visit by this U.S. president, one that could shape future relations.
Well, they want an America that's engaged in the region in all senses of the term. They want us here. They want us to show up, so it's good that the president's coming. That's important. As Woody Allen said, 80% of life is showing up, and so he gets points for that.
Given his unpredictability, Goodman says the first big test is whether the president stays on script when he speaks on Friday. Millar Sega for VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more about our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and on the voanews.com website. These are among the top stories trending on voanews.com in Asia. Delhi car use restricted as toxic smog blankets the Indian capital. Basketball player suspected of shoplifting in China, confined to hotel. Paradise Papers add to Indonesian to-do list for asset recovery. Sri Lanka says it will investigate alleged torture of Tamils. And games add levity to Vietnam seminars against trafficking. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Since becoming Philippines president nearly 18 months ago, Rodrigo Duterte has largely adopted a non-confrontational approach toward Beijing and its competing claims in the South China Sea. That might change at the APEC summit in Vietnam. As Steve Miller reports, Duterte says he plans to raise the issue of conflicting claims in the maritime body at the summit and to ask China its true intentions.
Since becoming Philippines president nearly 18 months ago, Rodrigo Duterte has largely adopted a non-confrontational approach toward Beijing and its competing claims in the South China Sea. Presidential spokesperson Ernesto Abella said in October 2016 that it was the position of the administration that confrontation didn't serve the interest of the Philippines, and that was why Duterte was committed to a process of engagement and negotiation that would ensure that Manila's rights are respected and protected. Prior to leaving for this year's Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Vietnam, Duterte said it was time to ask Beijing what its intentions are for the South China Sea and if Southeast Asian countries are allowed to freely navigate the disputed strategic waterway. But why raise this issue now? RAND Corporation Associate Director for the Center for Asia-Pacific Policy, Scott Harold, says Duterte's behavior may stem from the Philippine leader trying to play hard to get with Washington, while at the same time, he says, that can't mean signaling to China that anything they do is okay.
If he wants to extract resources or commitments or appear to his base to be sufficiently patriotic, nationalistic, what have you, he needs to stand up for the Philippines' claims.
Harold says that while Duterte has been content to downplay a July 2016 permanent court of arbitration award in favor of the Philippines, he must also convince his supporters that he's doing enough to merit their trust. Evan Rees, an Asia-Pacific analyst with the Texas-based think tank Stratfor, states Duterte's approach may have another explanation.
His softer approach to China isn't because he is trying to pursue a softer approach permanently with China. It's because he's a Philippine nationalist, and he's trying to shore up the Philippines' position. The Philippines is in this vulnerable spot where it's a maritime nation that needs to shore up its claims in the South China Sea, but it also has all kinds of internal problems to deal with.
Now that Marawi has been retaken from militants and the Moro peace process is moving forward, Rees says Duterte now possesses the opportunity to push forward the Philippines' maritime interests. However, China claims almost the entire South China Sea, where some $3 trillion worth of goods passes through each year. Beijing also repeatedly denied that the Permanent Court of Arbitration had the jurisdiction to hear Manila's challenge and rejected the award. With numerous artificial islands already developed by China in disputed waters, is it too late to raise the question of China's intention? Rees says no.
Because there are still things that the Philippines want.
Like economic development concessions and engaging in joint drilling projects. Rees says that by taking a slightly harder stance now, the Philippines can secure those things later on as China and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations develop a code of conduct for the South China Sea. Harold says preventing China from building on features in disputed waterways is likely beyond the capacity of any of the countries in Southeast Asia.
With whatever critiques or criticisms Mr. Duterte himself might be open to on the basis of either his domestic or foreign policies, I don't think a particularly fair one would be to say, look, he has failed to stop China, since that was not something that was within his or anyone else's capacity.
But with so many countries attending multilateral meetings like APEC, the East Asia Summit, and ASEAN, Harold says it makes sense for Duterte to raise the issue in this venue to try to secure a better deal. Steve Miller, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA Asia. You know, if you look at the night sky, it might be hard to see all of the stars that are there because of light pollution. But to learn more about how stars are formed, astronomers look at light coming from deep space that illuminates events that happened billions of years ago. Cosmic dust, vapor in the Earth's atmosphere, and light pollution can obscure that vision. But as VOA's George Putich tells us, scientists at NASA found a way around all of that by placing a sophisticated infrared telescope on board a high-flying aircraft.
Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, SOFIA for short, is a Boeing 747 jumbo jet converted to carry a 2.5-meter-wide precision infrared telescope, the biggest airborne telescope in the world. As it flies at night 12,000 meters above the Pacific Ocean, far away from coastal lights and clouds, scientists point the telescope at distant worlds, such as the center of our galaxy, where young stars circle a massive black hole. That view is clouded with a lot of cosmic dust, but infrared telescopes, sensitive to heat, can see through and bring us these stunning pictures.
It took 12.5 billion years for that light to travel from where it started to where we measured it. And it was just kind of surreal to think that we're flying in an airplane with a 2.5-meter telescope in the back, looking at light that's been traveling for 12.5 billion years.
In addition to the highly polished mirrors and cameras, the telescope had to be equipped with two essential systems, one for stabilization and the other for cooling. SOFIA is a joint project between NASA and the German Aerospace Center, which built the telescope while U.S. companies converted the aircraft and equipped it with support systems. The U.S. part of the project is managed by the university's Space Research Association. It is expected to last for at least another 10 years. George Putich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You know, you can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also download our podcast and take us with you. Find us at voanews.com. And let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.